Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. Today we're going to talk a little draft report cards. How you doing, Peter?
Doing well. It's a it's kind of a nice and more slow-ish time of year, otherwise known as handbook season. So yeah, we're all grinding away on our
prospect season,
respective handbook chapters, and we're fresh off of, I mean, without a doubt, the best World Series since 2016 for me in my lifetime, at least.
Right.
For having a fully formed brain, I don't really remember the two.
Those are mine. Those are mine too, as well. I mean, I've got what, 5-6 years on you, maybe. So in terms of like World Series, I can remember it's probably a similar pool, and I feel like up until this World Series, 2016 to me was like clearly the top dog. I think this one, it's a 1-2 for me. Like, I'm not sure exactly how I would order it. This one's obviously fresh. I think there's a lot more star power in this series comparatively, and just seeing the massive numbers it did was just cool to see as a baseball fan in general. But yeah, we were treated with a great one this year. That's no doubt.
Yeah, it's absolutely those two. I couldn't form a thought for the 2001 World Series with the Yankees and D-backs. So I have no real memories
of that either.
But yeah, at least compared to 2016, I think I might be a little bit of a prisoner of the moment with 25, but like that game 7, it's hard to think of a better individual baseball game. Obviously the 2016 game 7 was just as wild with the moments in that one with Rajay Davis's home run. And then, you know, the Cubs scoring a couple of go ahead runs and extras, but man, that was unbelievable. And that's also on top of the 18-inning game earlier on in the series, the ending to game 6. So it was like the perfect buildup that like somehow the 18-inning game and all that happened in the 9th inning of game 6 still led up to like this crescendo that outweighed all of it. So it was unbelievable. I think it was all that everyone hoped for and more. I know in our previous pod, and we'd both shared this sentiment, but you let off with it. You were like, yeah, I hope it just goes 7 games and it's really competitive. So, I mean,
it's always the hope, right?
I think that was like, that is the, like, if you were writing up the World Series or any of us were writing up the World Series and like how it would go in a perfect world and all of this, I don't think we could have thought up all that happened across those 7 games. So it was unbelievable. The Blue Jays were excellent. I mean, they were. I hope I'm not rubbing any salt on the wound for any Blue Jays listeners or scouts/evaluators listening, but man, they were as close as you can get.
Right. I mean, the ball falls a little bit differently on a single play. There's a different base running outcome. Like literally one different pitch separates them from losing and winning in a World Series game 7 extra innings. So yeah, you're right. As close as you possibly can come to winning. And although it sucks, they should feel absolutely no shame in how they played, because they were a ton of fun to watch. I also just love, I mean, this is common for baseball, but just the players who are not prominent, who come up with clutch moments and just big performances, is always a lot of fun. Just seeing what Ernie Clement did throughout the postseason was awesome. Yeah, it was great. Now we're in the period where we kind of just have to sit and wait for spring. Although I am enjoying just the fall season in general. And like we'd mentioned at the top, we are in the middle of our top 10s rollout prospect season, we call it here at Baseball America. This week, we've got all the NL East teams on the site. If you want to see updated prospect rankings and reports, those are on the site. We've got chats every day as we roll out top 10s. So if you're a fan of an American League team or a non-NL East team, don't worry. It will be coming on the site before you know it. And for most people who are listening to this podcast, you're probably just a general prospect fan. So we got this just kind of rolling out consistently. So what are we possibly talking about related to the draft today, Peter?
Oh, man. Well, not to spoil our next episode, the episode after this one, we'll be doing kind of a deep dive into all of the pitchers that fit at the top of the class, at least on the college side, with guys like Liam Peterson and Cam Flukie, Jackson Flora, a couple of others, and kind of getting in the weeds a little bit, similar to how we did with Rock Chalowski. But today, you chair a really cool exercise post-draft every year, and it's the draft report cards that you send around to all 30 teams. And I think it's a super productive exercise, not only for myself and, like, you know, seeing how teams are thinking, but, you know, also for BA as a whole, because it's a blend. It's, you know, the teams will send back their respective responses, and then it's also a blend of what you think in your
analysis. Yeah, so how it works is, well, I'll send out, like, our draft report. I mean, I kind of inherited this. It's not something that I came up with. This is a long-standing piece at Baseball America, draft report cards. It's basically the exercises to try and shine some light on each team's respective draft class, highlight a few. It's more superlatives than draft grades. We call it draft report cards, but I know some people who are maybe new to the series are always like, it's report cards, but there's no grades here. Well, we kind of have we're allergic to putting grades on a draft this far out. But mostly it's just to kind of highlight some players, highlight a team's given draft class. Some teams do take the time to kind of respond to the survey we send out and give their responses with some more detail on players. Other teams who choose not to, I'll just kind of work through their classes kind of on my own and pick out the winners for each category. But I feel like it is a good, like, we're far enough away from the draft itself, a little bit less than older eras. We get some playing time for the prospects. There was no team this year, I don't think, that didn't have any of their players playing official games. So there is something to look at from pro debuts from all these classes. But to your point, I think it's a useful exercise, even for me, someone who's, like, covering the draft as closely as you possibly can. And obviously you're in that bucket as well, Peter. But, like, there are always players who you either didn't know as much about, or maybe you kind of had them further down the pecking order of a draft class that just stands out to you for whatever reason, either because it's a player that we didn't know a ton about, who a team is really excited for because they saw him late in the year, or they were just a hideout guy. Like, they're always fun players with that. I like when teams can have interesting names for the most intriguing background. Some of these guys will know, like, why they're interesting in the first place, but there are always some fun kind of human element background pieces here. So it's just kind of fun to get a look at all 30 teams a few months out from the draft.
Yeah, and there are so many. I mean, if you haven't already checked it out, I would highly encourage you to, because there are a lot of superlatives and a ton of players mentioned, and you can kind of go deep a little bit on the class. I mean, it's hard to ask you what stood out the most with all 30 of them, but were there any players at least brought up, like, you know, if you take out the best 11th round pick and on / UDFA, if you take guys from that bucket out of it, were any players, we can go in any direction, were any guys mentioned that, you know, were not surprising to you, but, you know, set off, you know, an alarm bell or two, is like, you know, this is a guy to circle and maybe keep closer tabs on? I'm kind of curious, because in scrolling through this myself, I've already seen a handful of interesting names, but I'm curious who, if any, stood out to you.
Yeah, we should ping pong it back and forth maybe on that front, just players who stood out. But I'd say the first one who stood out to me is Ethan Conrad for the Cubs. I mean, this is a player who I think is super fascinating just because of the tool set. But just hearing some of the feedback from Chicago on this, like, how excited they are about him as a defender, even. Like, when I think about Ethan Conrad, what I mostly get excited about is just the contact skills, the power upside for him. I mean, 6'3", 220 pounds, one of these bigger players with a more compact swing than you would expect. And he has this really lengthy track record of great bat to ball skills in college. His performance early with Wake Forest was strong before he got hurt. But I mean, he's in a draft class with Kane Kepley, who we both thought was one of the very best defenders in the class at large, college or high school, whatever position you want to bring up. If you ask myself or Peter, like, hey, name the five best defenders in this class, I would assume both of us would name Kepley in that group. It's probably like Merrick Houston, Billy Carlson, Kane Kepley, Vance Honeycutt, or like the guy, Kaden Bodine, Luke Stevenson. Those are kind of the names I immediately point to. And then Conrad is even, like, just even him being mentioned in along with Kane Kepley for best defensive player in this class, I feel like is, it just speaks to his athleticism and how highly the Cubs think of him, because again, we graded Kepley out as a 70 grade defender, and here Ethan Conrad is a guy who I'm maybe thinking of as less likely to play corner outfield, just given that feedback. I mean, I certainly think he should get every opportunity to play center field because he does run well enough for the position. I think we've seen so many big physical defensive center fielders play the position well that, like, size is not a huge concern to me when you get these sort of athletic freaks who can just move around well enough. So I'm even more excited about what Ethan Conrad is going to be moving forward than I was beforehand. And I don't think I was, like, sleeping on Conrad too much. Like, I was pretty enamored with the tool set. So he's maybe one of the first guys that I would pick out from this exercise.
Yeah, that stood out to me as well, especially once you brought it up. And I echo your sentiment completely, because obviously, you know, the main draw for me and probably everyone is, you know, the hit power combo with Conrad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got this big league body and, you know, kind of looks the part, more of a corner guy long term than he does in center field. But to have that kind of feedback, you know, even though it's internal, I think is an extreme testament to how highly the Cubs think of of Conrad, and what kind of, for me, like you said, that's in a system that also drafted Cain Kepley, who, you know, we tossed around as one of the best defenders in the class and our best tools draft. So I mean, you know, he checks a whole lot of boxes, and I saw some video that was tweeted out of him like a few weeks ago at the complex or the backfields in Arizona. He looked really, really good swinging the bat, coming off of shoulder surgery. So his pro debut, and a lot of other guys who didn't make their pro debut post draft, but I know from a position player standpoint, I'm really looking forward to his pro debut in 26.
Right. Who would be a player for you who either was like a surprising name in a certain category, or a guy that you're like more excited about now, or just a name of note?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was more looking and kind of going towards like the deepish sleeper route and honing in on organizations, you know, like the Astros or the Dodgers, or, you know, maybe the Rays. I think with the Astros, what stood out to me was the amount of guys that fit into like their respective superlatives that weren't, you know, these necessarily like super prominent draft picks, so to speak. Like, you know, especially on the pitching side, it's fun to envision how the Astros might handle and develop someone like a Nick Potter or a Kellen Oakes. Nick Potter, Wichita State right-hander, his fastball was up to 100 with carry in the top of the zone. Pairs it with a slider, like profiles as a reliever probably at the next level. And then Kellen Oakes, who was the winner of the best secondary pitch superlative, like
his fifth rounder and ninth rounders respectively for these two.
Yeah, so I mean, his sweeper is a really good building block for his profile. So I mean, that stood out to me. And then also their best athlete being Bowling Green's DJ Newman, who was their 15th round pick. He was excellent at Bowling Green throughout his 3 years there. Kind of dealt with injuries a little bit in 24 and 25, especially in 25, but career 388 hitter. With 15 homers, and then on the mound, career A of 3.6 with 91 punch outs. There are a lot of avenues from a development standpoint you can go with Newman for me, at least just when he first kind of popped onto the scene in 23, just from a sheer level of performance. Like, he's always fit in the performance over tools bucket. Like, I'm not sure what's there in terms of actual tools, but he's been a really steady performer. He can do it on both sides.
And I think anytime you're looking at the Astros too in this 10 plus round range, got to be curious about the players, because we were talking about like notable players or teams who've had success in the 10 plus round range in our Slack the other day. And in the 2021 and 2022 drafts, the Astros already have three major leaguers who they drafted 10 plus in those two drafts: Chad Stevens, Zach DiCenzo, and then Will Wagner. I mean, none of these players have been breakthrough, like high impact players. But simply getting a big leaguer after the 10th round is a success, regardless of the quality of that big leaguer. So he's an interesting one. I believe Newman was one of only three players selected as two-way players in our draft database. You can sort by two-way players specifically, and Newman was the last two-way player drafted in the 15th round, in addition to Mitch Voit by the Mets at pick 38, and then Josh Owens in the third round at pick 84. So we'll see how long the two-way experiment actually lasts with him. I feel like for most players, it doesn't last too long, but one of three is pretty fun.
Yeah, my guess will be not very long because you know my take, and it's kind of a crass one of two-way players not existing. Like I just
in pro ball, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, there's one person on the planet who's a high impact two-way player at the big league level, and we all know who he is. I digress. But speaking of sort of the two-time defending world champions, I mean, someone like a Landon Vitterick was a guy that it was intriguing to me in the lead up to the draft, just because I think I wrote about him in like an underrated prospects piece or something in the lead up to the draft, just for, you know, like the raw tools that he has.
Right.
That's kind of the name of the game here with Vitterick.
Yeah, Vitterick is, I feel like he's kind of the exact sort of player who shines in a category like this, because like you could point to almost any of his tools and they're quite loud. So if he's not like the leading favorite to win a category, he's certainly in the conversation for many of them. I don't remember exactly how many we listed him for, but it had to have been at least three.
Yeah, so I mean, third round pick and outfielder out of Cincinnati, he was, you know, listed as the best power hitter, the fastest runner, and then, you know, he's also probably in I don't know about best defensive player, but you know, you were on the money with at least two of them, but you know, looks the part. There's real bat speed there, quality contact to all fields. Like the batted ball data in the lead up to the draft is what stood out to me. Mm-hmm. Especially like the performance was the performance, but it wasn't necessarily like super loud, knock your socks off type of deal. But, you know, the under the hood data was a real boost to what was already there from a tool standpoint with him.
And it was cool to see that translate to his pro debut as well, because just pulling some of the batted ball data for debut hitters and kind of lining them up. I mean, his 90th percentile exit velocity was the best of any player who had 50 or more plate appearances. 110.3 miles per hour is what we had it as, topping guys like Nolan Schubart, like Jared Jones, Ethan Frey, like big, huge sluggers from more prominent programs that certainly had more fanfare in the run up to the draft. I remember when Vitterick was taken, we had him as a late entry onto our draft board. I think he entered our list in maybe April or May. I don't remember the exact time that he came on, but we didn't have him ranked in the top 100 or near it, although his tools probably warranted him being a little closer. But like, I remember when he was taken, it was kind of a surprise to a number of people, and we were talking about it on the desk, and it was just like, hey, like this is a player who you could point to and say he has three pluses on his card between his arm, his raw power, and his speed. And Dan O'Dowd is just like, hey, like the Dodgers take guys like this and try and figure out the hitting with them moving forward. So I was happy to see the Dodgers in particular draft a player like this. I was excited about Mason Lagenza in the sixth round for a similar reason and wish he had signed. But yeah, Vitterick is a lot of fun.
FT fam, if you want more information about Superpower, I have real life customer Eric Kratz with us right now to explain how you're basically getting the pro experience available for everyone.
$199 is the price, and that's a discount from Superpower. That's a discount from everywhere. You get so much information from your lab test results. Christmas is coming up here soon. You can give this gift to somebody else. Health is the gift that keeps on giving.
Your blueprint activated with Superpower. Not only did Superpower reduce that price to what Kratz is talking about, just $199, but for a limited time, FT fam gets an additional $20 off with code TAKE20. head to superpower.com and use code TAKE20 at checkout for $20 off your membership. After you sign up, they're going to ask you how you heard about them and make sure you mention FT to support the show. Stop only reacting to health problems and start proactively improving your health based on real personalized data with Superpower.
The holidays can sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has a host of unique, high-quality, and often handmade gifts, many of which are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. That attention to detail often means products are made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast, like the book of famous Dodgers newspaper clippings ordered on Uncommon Goods that I received as a birthday gift. It was a special present catered to my liking that can't be found anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard baseball fans like me, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners, you'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not only finding the best and most unique gifts for the people you care about, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice and have donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Yeah, and like you said, it's sort of what Dan O'Dowd alluded to when you guys were talking about Vitterick. The X factor with him is how much he's going to hit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he's able to put the ball in play enough to get to these loud tools and generate this high quality impact on a regular basis. You know, he chased it just a 17% clip last spring with Cincinnati, but I'd have to pull what the overall contact rate is, but the overall contact rate for Vitterick was just 75% or a shade under. And then the end zone was 79%. But he was almost a passive hitter. He didn't, He didn't swing a whole lot. I think the zone swing was sub 60%. So, I mean, if he can get more aggressive on, you know, pitches kind of in his go zone, that could serve him well, but you know, moving the baseball with him is the key. But man, like the data is really impressive. It was an average EV of 93, 90th percentile exit velocity of 110. A lot of batted balls north of 110. He can pull the ball in the air. So I mean, it's bat speed. It's all fields juice. He can pull the ball. Like, I mean, if he hits enough, this is he's got a real chance. And like you said, he's also a plus runner and he knows how to run. I mean, he's not just this free runner who will, you know, kind of get on base and run into outs. I think he was 39 of 40 in stolen base attempts this past spring at Cincy. And then he went 3-for-3 in 16 games with single A Rancho Cucamonga. But he's a really fun player. I had him circled going into the draft. I have him even more heavily circled.
He's thrown a highlight on him now. Draft,
just given who he's with. But yeah, and I think, again, not to beat a dead horse here with the Dodgers, but Sam Horn has always been a fascinating player to me.
Tremendously so, yeah.
Yeah, a 17th round pick out of Missouri, right-handed pitcher, and also
quickly before you get into him, when he was taken in the 17th round, did you expect him to sign?
So
they signed him for just under $500,000. I guess with the signing bonus contingency, he got $500,000. But I wasn't sure when he was taken in that range if he was going to be signing or what was going to happen with him, because he didn't throw a ton and you could maybe make a case for him running it back and logging more innings because he's got like top three rounds pure arm talent. It's just a matter of like health and putting it together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. I wasn't totally sure if he would when I heard his name called, just because with Horn, another variable in all of this is he's a, or is, was, I don't know how you want to phrase it now, but He's a standout football player. Missouri is one of their team captains this year, and was kind of in this early season battle for QB1. But he unfortunately, like in one of their first plays from scrimmage in week one against like an FCS team, Central Arkansas, lower body injury, out for the season. Something with his, I don't want to speak out of turn and say what his injury was without actually like knowing 100% what it was, but it was something with his leg that I think required surgery. So obviously not great.
But it was a fractured tibia in his right leg, it looks like.
Yeah. So, I mean, not awesome, but I mean, as you can hear, it's a pretty interesting path. So, I mean, mm-hmm. he kind of easily took home the most intriguing background superlative. And then the stuff on the mound is really, really appealing. And he's also this low mileage college arm. So, I mean, I think like, you know, he's an intriguing one for any organization to get their hands on. But if it was like,
it also just fits with the Dodgers. Like the Dodgers and the Braves to me have taken so many of these. I don't know if the Dodgers specifically have like a multi-sport two-way player sort of bias like the Braves definitely have, but they both are willing to take players with injury history in addition to the football injury that we just talked about. He also had TJ and has limited time on the mound because of that. Like the Dodgers seem perfectly willing to take these injury-prone guys or guys with injury histories if they have great arm talent, because they can just throw a ton of those arms at you, hope to patch together the rotation and the bullpen and figure it out throughout the season with tremendous depth. But they're going to have bat missers who just maybe won't be giving you 200 innings every year.
Yeah, and I mean, getting this kind of arm talent in the 17th, it's like, why not? I mean,
that's why I didn't know if he was even going to sign, but kudos to them for getting it done that deep.
Yeah, like we toss around the phrase like moldable ball of clay a lot. Like this is that, I think, to a T. Like they're great building blocks here. He's a dynamic mover, 6'4", 220 pounds with, you know, big time arm speed. The fastball was up to 98 to 99 with a ton of life through the zone. It's at its best when elevated. And then, you know, he's only thrown 15 innings, so there's only so much of a sample to go off of, but he's got this two-plane slider in the low to mid 80s that looks the part of a potentially effective off-speed. So, I mean, it's kind of crude in the fact, you know, he's a two-pitch guy right now. There are, you know, control questions, but, you know, at least for a pitcher, like, you know, we don't really talk about pitchers having tools, but like for the sake of this exercise, like the tools are in place. You know, especially for someone like a Dodger, I got a little yipped up there, but for someone like a Dodgers to, you know, develop this guy and turn him into a really effective arm, you know, even if he fits into that reliever bucket long-term, which is where I think he profiles best. But like, you know, there's a lot to like with Horn, and even more so just given who drafted him.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take us to the American League. I'm going to go into the American League Central here. There are a couple pitchers, I think, who are interesting with the Guardians in this draft class and specific pitch types in particular I want to talk about. Though, just before we get into those arms, do we need to change what we think about a kind of Cleveland model hitter after this draft, Peter? Because Jace LaViolette, Nolan Schubart were certainly not the sort of hitting profiles I associated with them. I guess aside from them being left-handed, but it does feel like in recent years, they've just taken a little bit more thump than they previously have. They still have their contact savants further down in this draft class. Guys like Luke Hill, guys like Riley Nelson, Anthony Martinez are all sort of the kind of contact first hitterish types, that definitely fit with Cleveland. But I guess just a note, still funny to me to think of Cleveland drafting not only Jace LaViolette in the first, but also Nolan Schubart in the third, which I think for any team, regardless of Tennessee, is Schubart's power is maybe too much to pass up when you're at pick 101.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of trend in the last couple of years, at least with Cleveland. We'll see if it continues into 26, but you know, where they took Jace, I think, is a more than adequate spot. Even given the 25 season that he kind of endured, but
it's weird because if you're someone who like doesn't, if you don't like those profiles, if they scare you, but because they scare everyone else too, it keeps going further and further down the board. Like, where does everyone draw the line for where the risk is tolerable is such a fun conversation. I would love to be able to like go around a room for every team or every decision maker and say like, okay, at what point is when it's okay for you to take X profile that you maybe would typically just not want to take? Like, the talent's too good. You're kind of forced to take it at some point.
Yeah, I think that's a great point as well. And you can argue, you know, Lavalette certainly fits that description, but there's a chance, depending on how you viewed him in the lead up to the draft, that Schubart also fits in that description. I mean, it's double plus raw power from the left side. I mean, if he gets into that in game consistently is a pretty big if, but it's like, how far do you let a profile like that slide? He's personally not my cup of tea. But, you know, the Guardians are such a smart organization. So it's like, you know, when they pick, you kind of listen a little bit, mm-hmm. And your ears perk up a little bit more. So two definitely interesting picks. But
yeah, the pitchers I want to get into in particular, though, for best secondary pitch, Harrison Bodendorf, his changeup. It's a low 80s pitch that he used this spring and generated nearly a 50% miss rate. It was right under that at 49%. He throws it to both lefties and righties, who hit just 149, 194, 190 against that pitch. And also Bodendorf took home the most intriguing background category. I didn't know this prior to the draft, but he was not a player who got a ton of interest coming out of college and actually was a preferred walk-on at Hawaii. He pitched there for 2 years and then transferred to Oklahoma State, where he was one of the most important pitchers on that team. So it's always very cool to hear about a player who is like a walk-on or preferred walk-on, just didn't have a lot of buzz and attention, and then turns himself into like a legitimate draft prospect and gets to a power conference and power program and really does well. So I think that pitch is one to keep an eye on, even if it's maybe not the most obvious best secondary pitch in the system. Like Will Hines, his breaking ball is also mentioned here, and it's a pretty exciting high spin sweeper. But the other pitch, maybe the more fascinating one, is Ole Miss right-hander Will McCausland. We have him down in the best fastball category, and if you were to mention McCausland in this category 10 years ago, you'd probably scratch your heads and like wonder, okay, did they just not take a lot of hard throwers? Did they have a really hitter heavy draft? Because it's not a fastball that has a ton of velocity. He sits in the low 90s with the pitch. I think he averaged just over 91 miles per hour last spring. He'll touch 94, 95. So he's touching velocity that's like close to average for a major league right-handed starter these days, but it is an absolute invisible. It's very flat angled. Flat approach angle. The VAA is sub 4, which is an elite number. It has great riding life. He got a 38% miss rate with the fastball this spring with Ole Miss, and I believe only Liam Doyle had a swinging strike rate higher than McCausland's swinging strike rate this spring of any pitcher. And like Doyle's fastball was famous throughout the entirety of the draft cycle. Really, everyone is very aware of just how good his fastball was. And when it's 7 miles per hour harder coming out of a left-handed start in the SEC, I guess that does give it some more gravitas. But Will McCausland is definitely a pitch that I think you're going to want to just make sure you check in on and keep in mind. He also had a pretty solid debut. He threw 10 innings in low A, struck out 15 batters, walked 4, had a 2.70 ERA. So those are two pitchers, I think, who are really interesting, will be intriguing to follow from an organization that just tends to do pitching development really well.
Yeah, and starting with Bodendorf, you know, it's a plus changeup for me, at least, you know, if it's not already there, it's easy to envision it becoming a plus pitch. And like from a ceiling standpoint, it's not this like monster ceiling, but he's a 6'5 lefty with funk. You can probably add, you know, 10 to 15 plus pounds to his body. And, you know, you see this stuff and velo tick up across the board. But, you know, I think there's a chance he's an effective back of the rotation arm when all is said and done. You know, it strikes, he commands the baseball well. It's, a legit three pitch mix headlined by the changeup, but you know, he's a funky left-hander. I like him a lot. And then with Will McCausland, I'm psyched you brought him up, because in our piece that we did right after the second and now final day of the draft.
Yeah, he was a favorite of yours. I think you drafted him, right, in our little follow-up.
Yeah, so I tabbed Will McCausland, and it was for the exact reason that you said, with the invisible, with his heater. And you touched on everything perfectly with the, you know, ultra flat and elite approach angle. And, you know, it's from a velo standpoint, it's not really overwhelming, but everything under the hood helps.
I'm also writing up the Brave well. System, and it really sounds like kind of this Owen Murphy fastball, similar velocity range, I think similar vertical approach. I don't know if it's like more just like crazy carry, but it's a similar like really low release point, flat, heavy right pitch that plays well up from the like 90, 93 velocity that you see from it. So hopefully you can add a little bit more velocity to that pitch and make it even more lethal moving forward.
Yeah, and it was encouraging to see him have a strong pro debut as well, which you had also brought up. So, I mean, he's trending in the right direction. And then, you know, on top of his heater, he's got this kind of cut slide hybrid that's an effective secondary, late glove side life, another effective pitch. So those are two really interesting arms. I think, you know, with some organizations, and we had brought this up before leading into, I think it was Vitterick, but, you know, you pay attention a little bit more to what certain organizations do. And I think the Guardians, especially when it comes to pitching, you know, you kind of listen a little bit more. But I guess on that note, you know, Seattle with right-hander Lucas Kelly in the sixth round, taken out of Arizona State. It's another big time heater. He was up to 99 with it this past spring at ASU, and again just kind of a classic like Seattle development arm to watch. Like, I think the whiff rate on it was 35%, you know, with solid extension, a pretty flat vertical approach angle.
Yeah, this sidearm slot he throws from as well.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of unique traits there with Kelly. And then Kate Anderson is Kate Anderson. So he unsurprisingly fit or won a number of these yeah. post-draft superlatives.
For the pitching categories, when you're taking someone like Kate Anderson, it kind of boxes a lot of people out, so it can be tough. One of the teams, the last team I wanted to mention here as we kind of get close to the end of the show, we haven't talked a ton about specific like best 11 plus round pick categories overall for a team, but like the Padres were maybe one of the most interesting teams for this category in general, just the volume of names that I found really interesting. I mean, they spent $654,000 on Truett Madonna, who's a catcher out of Washington High School. I'm just fascinated in what the Padres see of him, what they have here with Truett Madonna, because I don't know a ton about him, but they paid him a lot of money to get him out of a UCLA commitment. So he's immediately just the money where they took him. I'll be curious if his name comes up at all in your reporting and writing of the Padres system this offseason. But they were also one of the most aggressive teams on the undrafted free agent market. They had one player in this range who we ranked on the BA 500, Northwest Florida outfielder Cray Lott. He's got solid speed and power. McNeese State outfielder Connor Wessenberg is a guy that we had on our senior sign list, I believe. Top of the scale runner, maybe a really good defender in center field. And then Mercer shortstop Bradley Fry is coming off a really strong season where he homered 12 times, doubled 18 times, and also stole 16 bases. So I feel like the Padres in general, I always appreciate how they scout and evaluate players. It feels like they make prospects appear out of thin air year after year after liquidating all their prospect capital and trades. And then next year, boom, we're talking about all these rising prospects who have kind of reinvigorated a system that we went in the offseason thinking, oh, it's really shallow, it falls off really quickly. Next summer, I'm sure we're going to be talking about a prospect or a handful that all of a sudden are looking really, really exciting. I'm not saying that like any of these guys are going to shoot up into the top 100, but I do think it's a really interesting collection of post top 10 round players to watch out for.
Yeah, so at least with Trout Madonna, I mean, he's someone that they view pretty highly, and just having their system for our prospect handbook, I mean, he came up in conversations for, you know, right outside the top 10 and kind of knocking on the door. And he'll be in a solid spot, probably in the teens, like kind of this classic big physical catcher, arm strength, power guy. But there's a lot to like with him. And then Cray Lott is, I'm psyched you A, went to the Padres, and also B, brought up Lott, because he was selected out of high school by the Orioles in the 15th round in 2023. And I really liked the pick then, if they were able to sign him, but they weren't able to sign him. So he goes to Northwest Florida State, junior college powerhouse. But it's a pretty appealing blend of, you know, now tools, but like big time upside. Like, I don't want to say five tool upside, because that's such a bullish ceiling to stick on someone, but there's real upside here with Lott on both sides of the baseball. I mean, he's 6'5", 190. Certainly looks the part. He's gotten stronger since being drafted, obviously, as a prepster. Kind of had an underwhelming freshman year at Northwest Florida State. Was obviously eligible again for the draft, being in a junior college, went undrafted. And then comes back this year, hits 371 with 9 doubles, 9 homers, swipe 17 bags. It's an uptick in power, impacting the baseball more. But there's bat speed now. There's more bat speed to come and develop. He's continuing to get stronger and put on more muscle. Like, there's great baseball sense there. Like, I think that the Padres internally, and this is not even outing anyone with whom I've had a conversation, but I think the Padres internally are really, really fired up about this pick, because there's a ton to like with Cray Lott, and getting him in the spot that they did, I think that just makes it all the better.
Yeah. Well, there is plenty more to be found in the actual draft report card pages on the site. So there's a landing page on the site where you can access every single DRC that we have and really go through the full list for every team. It would probably take us a very long time to go through every team and touch on a lot of the players we're interested in each of these clubs. So definitely check out the full piece on the site. Peter, any final thoughts, any final comments, anything you want to plug, mention, get off your chest here before we wrap up the show today?
Man, get off my chest. That's a deeper question on the draft pod, but no, that was a fun exercise as always. I'd encourage you to go over to the site and check out the draft report cards, because, you know, not only will you read up on, you know, a number of prominent picks and, you know, maybe why the club that drafted them values them so high, but, you know, you might also stumble across some other names that you find intriguing and you can do a deep dive on yourself. But I encourage you to pre-order the prospect handbook and or the Baseball America Almanac. Both are outstanding gifts, whether it's for a huge baseball fan in your family or even for yourself. You know, the holidays are coming up. And I think if you pre-order it, you'll get PDF access to it. I don't want to.
JJ has said January publicly. I know last year it was out even before then, but either way, you'll get access.
Christmas last year.
Yeah, you'll get access to the handbook as early as anyone does, and far before the print product comes out. If you get, and it's just free. You get access to the PDF alongside your purchase of the physical copy that'll be shipped in around March or so, is typical.
Yeah, regardless of when it is, you'll be one of the first people to get handbook access if you pre-order it. So ordering those would be a wise choice, I think. And then heading on over to the website, whether you're, as we always say, whether you're a college nut, draft nut, more focused on prospects and in the professional side of things, or even, you know, fantasy and in the big leagues, there's anything that you could possibly want over on the site at baseballamerica.com. So would very much encourage you popping on over there and subscribing, because it allows us to do what we do. So we cannot thank you guys enough for that.
Yeah, well said. Don't need to add any more to that. Thank you, Peter. And thank you guys for listening and hanging out with us. Hopefully you'll have a great weekend. See us back here on the Draft Pod in 2 weeks from now. But for Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.